Welcome to the Catholic Apostolate Center podcast series. Today's podcast is a presentation that the center sponsored at the 2018 Mid-Atlantic Congress in Baltimore, entitled Collaborative Pastoral Planning. To view the slides the presenters reference, please go online to www.catholicapostolatecenter.org. Without further ado, I will let the presenters introduce themselves.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Father Frank Donio of the Catholic Apostolate Center, and welcome to Collaborative Pastoral Planning. I'm together with two of my colleagues who also are advisors to the center, but have wonderful day jobs, and they'll tell you about them. So, Barbara?
So, I'm Barbara Humphrey-McCrabb, and I've been actually an advisor for the center for a number of years. My day job is I work with the bishops at the USCCB. I'm in the Secretariat for Catholic Education, and I'm our higher ed person. So I do Catholic colleges and universities, I do campus ministry, wherever that happens, state schools, Newman centers, private non-Catholic institutions. It is a delight and pleasure to be with you this morning.
And I'm Susan Timoney. I'm the Secretary for Pastoral Ministry and Social Concerns at the Archdiocese of Washington. And so our Secretariat oversees the implementation of the new evangelization in our parishes across all ages, right? Youth and young adult ministry and family life and cultural diversity, to name a few, as well as overseeing pastoral planning with our parish teams and in our parishes.
So a great deal of expertise that's here in the room, but it's not just here in the front of the room, it's with you as well. And so you'll have opportunities throughout our session to be able to interact with one another, to share, and also afterward. But Barbara's going to give us a roadmap for the session and give us a sense of where we're going.
So to give you a sense of where we're going to start with a framework that will at least give you kind of terms and a sense of what we're talking about in terms of pastoral planning. We're going to move pretty quickly through that. I hope that many of you are familiar with some of those terms already. We're going to start with our framework. We're going to give you, ourselves and you an opportunity to reflect a little bit on what it means to witness, how we witness, what that looks like. We're going to give you some tools for forming missionary disciples, and that's a very intentional framework for us. I'm mindful that parishes are... It's not a cookie cutter, there's not one size fits all. So the idea is for us to give you tools that you'll be able to use in your ministerial setting to adapt as you need, and then we'll look at sending you forth. So we'll move quickly in the beginning. And then we'll be able to engage you in conversation. Thanks.
So let's define some terms. Let's take a look at the terms that we're using, because the difficulty sometimes is that we'll say things that are now coming into church lexicon or have been there already, and yet we're not sure what they mean right now in terms of the conversation within church. When we talk about pastoral planning or encounter, accompany, community, send, what do we mean by those terms? Those terms are terms that are there. We use them, particularly the first one. Some of the others are maybe coming a bit more into the conversation in the church, and particularly in this document of the U.S. bishops called Living as Missionary Disciples, which is also about pastoral planning. And we'll be unpacking those pieces. But I want you to just take a moment to turn to one another and ask the other person, what does pastoral planning mean? What does that mean? So turn to somebody else. You use the term probably a lot. What does it mean?
So how would you describe pastoral planning? We got time for maybe two or three. Yeah.
Anthony.
Anthony.
We were talking about how it could be both the logistical planning of the parish life and the regular events and things going on in a parish, but also responding to the needs of the parish community and how it's necessary for for the logistical planning to incorporate those needs, for those needs to be, that conversation become practical. So that.
Excellent. Who else? Yes.
I think a big part of it is also listening. It's not necessarily going into it knowing or going into it with a predetermined pathway.
Right.
It's really about sitting down and listening with the pastor, listening with ministry leaders, listening with parishioners,
right,
and trying to really understand where the parish is at, so we can lead them and help them understand what it means to be encountering ourselves, helping ourselves, you know, witnessing right. ourselves, so that we can create these pathways to be missionary.
Listening. Mm. Excellent. In many ways, not unlike the image of responding to parish need. But in order to respond, you have to hear what those are. How about one more?
In the blue
screen. Yep, right.
Thank you.
I was just going to add, it involves prayer, and it also involves creativity. Being able to look outside the box and not look at it as it always has been.
Awesome.
Great. So let's begin with the encounter. If there was one word we would use to describe the ministry of Jesus Christ, we would say encounter, right? From the minute that he invited the disciples to come and see, to his encounter with the woman at the well, to his encounter with the disciples in the upper room as he sent them forth, we know that the heart of his ministry was the encounter, to invite people to see in him not only their true selves, but also what God had planned for them. So we might say, then why the heck do we need to think and reflect upon encounter as part of pastoral ministry? Because I think as Catholics, sometimes we get comfortable or we get dependent on all of the language that we use to talk about Jesus. Jesus the Sacred Heart, Jesus the second person of the Trinity, Jesus the Lamb of God. And I remember when I was teaching RCIA, we were doing an evaluation at the end, and I was asking for comments, what did people learn about Jesus? And one of the young men said, I learned a lot about the Catholic Church, I don't think I learned much about Jesus. And how many of us probably have had a similar experience? Because I think it's not that we don't know that we're talking about Jesus, but because we can talk about him in so many different ways, wrapped in our experience of church, we forget sometimes to emphasize it's the encounter with a living person, right? That the faith is an encounter with a living person, and that's the encounter with Jesus Christ.
So if we look at a company, right? In some ways, we heard it in a response to or listening to the people in the pews. It's a lot of my work has been on university campuses, and it is a privileged place to walk with someone in their faith journey. Sometimes you get to ask the questions that stir some of their prayer or some of their thinking about an issue, right? But that experience, as they have that encounter, they want to be able to sort through that, to make sense of that. You know, I had this experience, and now what does that mean? How do I live that out? How do I put that into practice? And that image of accompaniment is just a gift that we offer as people of faith to one another. And I think one of perhaps a good friend of mine, Their image was, you know, God gave us two ears and one mouth, and we should use them in that proportion, right? As an extrovert, that's really hard for me to remember. But accompaniment is listening and walking with. It's not having the predetermined answers of what you should do, but how we discover that together in as we accompany one another.
And I think that idea of we don't have preconceived ideas and we're listening, but we know the way in which we're walking. So to me, when we talk about accompanying where, we're accompanying people into the life of the community that is the church. If you think about Jesus's encounter on the road to Emmaus with the disciples, he walked 7 miles in the wrong direction because he was listening, he was trying to understand, he was talking with them, but at a certain point, they turned and headed toward Jerusalem because Jesus' intent, right, is to bring people where? Into the life of the community. And so for us, we're accompanying people into full and active participation in the sacramental life of the church and in the community, that is the family.
And then the community is not just a place that is just simply, well, all right, I'm very comfortable here, I like being here, can I have my three booths up on the mountain, this is great. It's a community that's sent. We're told at the end of every Eucharistic liturgy, every Mass, go. And you what? We're sent to make disciples of all nations. And therefore, we're sent on mission every single day. Every single day, we are all sent on mission by Christ to witness to him and to draw people into the life of faith in and through the church, but in an encounter with Christ, accompanying them into this encounter, building and nurturing this community that continues to send forth, not a single sending forth, but a sending forth that is continual all throughout life, and a deepening, that metanoia, deepening life in Christ until our last breath.
Okay, I want to pause here and really engage you in the conversation. So we've talked about, right, encounter and accompany and community and sending. So if we think about that as kind of the foundation for our pastoral plan, I want you to think about where you personally are on this continuum, right? If some of those ideas, concepts are Greek to you, I'm not sure what they mean. I don't know how that works. Sometimes we do that in service, right? That there's an effort. We're going to go help, or we're going to bring our folks to help in that process. Maybe we're growing. The parish is kind of getting a sense of what that means or what that might look like, or even I personally better understand it's my accompaniment with listening twice as much as I talk. It's a greater appreciation of that as a growth step. Or maybe we are. I fully get that sense of missionary discipleship, and I'm doing my best to live that out. So where are you personally in that process? Where would you place yourself on that spectrum, that continuum? So let me pause you because I'm going to do parish question next. Yep. I'm asking where you are on that continuum.
I'm between growing the parish and missionaries.
Discipleship. Mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody else? Yeah.
I'm stuck at this service.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Who else? Come on, this side of the room. Wake up, man. They're doing all the answers. Like, let's go. Did you not get your coffee this morning? What do you think?
Well, growing the parish, but isn't that like evangelization or
mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it's not just, so sometimes when we think about evangelization, we think about getting more numbers into the pews. And that's not what we're talking about, right? Because the encounter with Christ, evangelization, takes us deeper into that relationship. Right, and sometimes that means being out on the streets or in, you know, other places where people of faith gather to have those conversations. So, yes.
I was gonna say I would think that I'm probably more the missionary discipleship.
Okay.
Even though I interrupted you, what you were talking about are like that's what I do with a lot of my peers is to have those mm-hmm. conversations.
Fantastic.
About, well, usually they'll come to me because they know I'm one of the only people who are in church.
Yeah.
So they
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so
you have the shirt that says, ask me.
And I think it leads to growing, it can lead to growing the parish.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Christmas, one of my friends who I would have never thought would have gone to church and asked me to take them to midnight mass.
Oh, fantastic. Nice.
I think that's probably where I would be.
So let me shift the question now to think about your parish, right? And where would you see them? So we heard, tell me your name.
Darren.
So Darren's parish has some folks in all of the, at every spot along the way on that continuum. How about your parish? Where would you characterize your parish on that continuum?
I'd say it's like Darren, our parish is all across, because you have people who come in to ministry and still are, it's great to meet. And then you have people who are very well formed, you have different ministry groups who have been formed and know what it means to be sent. And you have people who go, evangelization, isn't that a Protestant word?
Right. Yeah. So, Christine, I think that's a really good connection between why we put service there, is because we can be busy about many things, but not necessarily growing in our understanding of Jesus and the mission. And I think you really caught that well. Thank you.
Let me go here and then in the back.
I would say that in my parish sometimes they're most focused on the service rather than the goal, the disciples that Jesus wants to be.
Absolutely. And in the back.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All the way in the back.
In the last year in Baltimore, we began to combine parishes. There's a three stage of where parishes meet, so that sometimes it's three parishes that are going to be joined or two. We have three phases, and I think we're at we're growing the parishes, but we're at the Tower of Babel. I mean, we are all speaking different, and we need to begin to come together more. And not come together as the parish that we were, these three, but embrace each other and come together more. So we need a lot of prayer.
Absolutely. Yes.
I'm going to say something very similar. So we can be in all those four different places, but each group has a set way of how they think they're going to get there. And everybody's paddling really hard, but in different directions.
Amen. Exactly. Yeah. And the boat doesn't move that way, right? I guess one of the things I would want to say, I mean, as Father Frank and I have, we do a fair amount of work on collaboration, right? And the center is certainly about that. And doing deep, honest, candid work around collaboration requires time and conversation. And, you know, I was with a group of Catholic University folks who are looking at how we sustain the richness of Catholic higher education, not necessarily one particular school, but the breadth of Catholic higher ed. And that, you know, one of the presidents said, that may mean that some of our schools die in order for two or three new parishes to come together as one, because the one is a new creation, and it draws on the richness and the gifts of the community that's now gathered. But we have to let go of how Sacred Heart did it for however long we've done it, right? That there's got to be the openness to hearing the other person, and to discern how we will choose either one path or the other, or maybe a totally new way of proceeding. And I think that's certainly what Pope Francis is calling us to.
And he's calling us, and Pope Emeritus Benedict was doing the similar thing, as have the last several popes. And then when we go back to the Second Vatican Council, and the focus on the universal call to holiness, this is what we're talking about, the encounter with Christ. Susan's story about the RCIA is a perfect story. We can do a great deal of talking about church. We can do a great deal of planning about church. But are we encountering Christ, or are we on the road often, like the disciples, where Jesus himself drew near and walked with them, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing him? These were close-in disciples. These were people who knew all that was going on, particularly after they started to say what they knew. in the community. They were some of the, just as we would have, some of the most involved parishioners. But the risen Christ was standing right there, and their eyes were prevented from recognizing them. Why? Because they were so caught up in the pastoral planning. We'll sometimes do that. People will get caught up, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We've got these buildings, we've got this, we've got that, we've got the other thing. Reality is, it's about this. Encounter with Christ, and then being able to talk about it. That's the part that often is the hardest.
So in Jesus working with his disciples, at a certain point, what did he do? At Caesarea Philippi, he said, "Who do you say I am?" And we see that Jesus was beginning to prepare them for the twofold understanding of encounter. First is, it's the encounter that we have had with the Lord. And how has that encounter shaped our call to missionary discipleship? Do we have a witness story? I'm guessing, what is your name, sir, in the back there? Yeah.
Devin.
I'm guessing that Devin can really tell his witness story in a compelling way. I'm guessing that he can break it down in different pieces with the various people who come and ask him or want to talk with him about more. And so one of the, Benedict said one time in preparation for the Holy Year that we had to assess the caliber of our relationship with our Lord. And so what is the caliber of our encounter with Jesus? And then secondly, how do we share it? When are we being asked to share it? And do we live fully that responsibility? So this past week, my niece asked me to be her confirmation sponsor, and then her father called 2 days later and said, "The confirmation retreat is this weekend, you have to write a letter to her." And I said, okay, so I sit down to write the letter, and I thought, I need to talk to her about Jesus. I need to talk to her about why Jesus is so important to me, and I need to invite her to consider where Jesus is going to be in her life. And so I think it's that ability to be able to understand our own story so we can unpack it and share it with the person to whom we're talking or sending a letter or listening to in the life of the parish community.
So what I'd like to do is have us look at a couple of questions, right? So do I have a relationship with Jesus Christ? In what ways do I cultivate this friendship with Jesus and his church? Right, this is you personally. How do I help others grow in their relationship with Christ and the church? And what opportunities does the parish provide to cultivate ongoing encounters with Jesus? So what I'm going to ask you to do is kind of find three, four, just do groups of three or four, and I mean, you can decide the question that you want to answer, but I want to ask you to reflect on, frankly, your own witness, the witness of your story, and how that plays out in your parish life, right? How do you help others grow? What opportunities does the parish provide? So we're going to give you about 10 minutes. So find your group. Maybe, how are we doing time-wise?
We're great
on time. So you'll have 10 minutes in your group. So please make sure everybody gets a chance to respond. And we'll go from there.
I see that people listen to Father perhaps more than they listen to the ladies. Okay, so can we have two or three fruits of the conversation? What came out in your conversation that you thought was really helpful?
And wait for the microphone to come back, please.
There we go, all the way in the back. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, my name is Kim Peeks. I'm from Holy Comforter St. Cyprian Church in Washington, D.C., Monsignor Charles Pope. Yay. And we immediately went to question four, mainly because we all feel that in our parishes right now, we have, we kind of stop after RCIA. The parish itself isn't cultivating that journey as we go toward Christ. And I mean, we just stopped right there. We were talking about that. So that was one of the main points we're going over.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Another insight that will be helpful to the group.
I heard a lot of conversation going.
Anthony, looks like you have something to say there.
Thank you. Should I stand up? Yeah. So we talked about kind of our journeying with different people and our attempting to maintain our own relationships with Jesus and kind of the struggle to do enough, both in maintaining our relationship amidst the busyness of planning and of pastoral work, and also in accompanying people and how we see the fruits of that work and integrating the sense that this is God's work at the end of the day. And so that balance of responding to our call to accompany people in practical ways, but then also somehow allowing space for the Spirit to move and letting go of the need for the results that we think need to happen. So that was our conversation.
So here we saw two dimensions. One is recognizing, determining a need that's not being met, and then talking a little bit about what does a company look like? What qualities do we want to bring to that accompaniment? Which leads us really nicely into what does a pastoral planning process look like that's geared toward the new evangelization?
Pastoral planning process for missionary discipleship in many ways has six dimensions associated with it. And we're going to spend a little time with each of these dimensions. The first is that it's permeated with prayer. Permeated with prayer, not occasional perfunctory prayer. Permeated with prayer. Then focused on fruitfulness. Results and outcomes are wonderful things, but fruitfulness is what we are called to as followers, disciples, missionary disciples of Christ. It requires... What's that?
What does that mean?
We're gonna be unpacking that in a moment. Hang on tight.
I know.
Just give me a taste here.
Right. This is just a roadmap.
Requires leaders who are well-formed, rooted in the teachings of our faith and supported by foundational pastoral practices. Notice, not bifurcated, pastoral teachings together. Hello. They don't just coexist or in terrible tension with one another. They are together. Engages and inspires people through a culture of encounter and accompaniment, building strong and trusting relationships. So this is a culture, not just simply one off over here, we're going to be hospitable this moment and nasty the next moment. Instead, how do we go about creating a culture? And then requires intentional stewardship. And you'll notice that we're going to flip the last two to be able to focus in a little bit more. You'll notice as we go through the slides that 5 and 6 are flipped. And there's a reason for that. So, permeated with prayer.
That would be me.
That would be you.
Okay.
So in part for, well, one is, as you were introducing that, the image I had of being permeated with prayer. How many of you have children? So do you remember when they were baptized and, you know, Father took the chrism and spread it all over them, and for 2 weeks they smelled like chrism, right? That's what we mean by permeated, right? That I don't care how many baths you have given them, although I like the smell, so I was like, can we let it linger a little longer, right? But there's a sense of it's there. Like you just get close to it and you sense prayer, right? When you encounter somebody and you know they're rooted in prayer, because when they're stressed, you might observe some of the tendencies or habits that emerge when we're stressed. But underlying that, there is a calm and a peace that resides. And I see this in stages. If you personally are not taking time for prayer, you can't legislate that for the rest of the folks that you work with. Because while your words might give service, what they see in you and how you operate is not imbued with that sense of prayer, right? So in our own lives, but then how in the parish do we do that? You know, and I've having been on a parish staff where, you know, we do staff meetings and you have the perfunctory 2 minutes of kind of prayer with a passage and then, okay, let's go, because now we got work to do, is not permeating all that we do with prayer. Sometimes 20, 30 minutes of prayer deeply encountered and participated in a staff meeting means that the next half hour conversation goes much better than when we do that quick, okay, God bless us as we argue about how we're gonna decorate for, right? So that sense of permeated in prayer, that we need that prayerful context to shape all that we do. Not only what we do, but how we do it, permeated in prayer.
Which that what we do and how we do it is the discernment piece for which prayer is so essential. So when we talk about focused on fruitfulness, we really are talking about that scriptural image, right, of planting the seed, of watering the seed, of being able to tear out the weeds that are not allowing the new growth, and then of recognizing only with the hand of God, right, do we plant this beautiful garden or this beautiful field? And so I think the focused on fruitfulness begins with saying we have to trust that the Lord has a plan for his church. And to the degree that we can discern our part of the responsibility, the fact is our part of the responsibility is to do the planting and the watering and the weeding so that the Lord and the Holy Spirit can do the work of bringing forth the church that he intends for his people. So the fruitfulness really is comes through having some sort of planning process that has some foresight. You have a sense of where you're trying to lead the community. And one of the things I would have to say is it can't be a 5-year or a 10-year strategic plan. I think to think about 2 to 3 years, right? It's the life cycle of a pastoral council. I feel like from my parish experience, it's about how long you can keep a parish focused and moving. It allows for the fact that there could be a change in pastor, there could be a change in pastoral staff. But the idea of also, I think what's also new to us is, and it says this in Living in Missionary Disciples, pruning through planning so new growth can occur. And one of the insights that has come to me in my experience is I just think we've got to face the reality that maybe less is more in our parish ministry. Maybe to focus on accompanying, to focus on welcoming people into the community means that we've got to be really choosy in a thoughtful and discerning kind of way of what ministries are essential to where we're leading the community and where is it time to prune. Sometimes it's the community in which our that may be changing that encourages us, asks us to ask this question. Sometimes it's the reality that we've got limited resources and so we have to be good stewards of those resources. So the fruitfulness is the kind of planning that allows us to identify what's the overall fruit we're hoping to nurture and to grow, and what outcomes align then with the ministries and programs that we have. How do we align the fruit that we're hoping to cultivate with the ministry and the programs we have presently? And are we doing that in prayer? And are we doing that knowing that good growth always comes with a little bit and sometimes a lot of pruning? And so you've got to hold that creative tension between pruning and planting.
And in order to discern that well, it requires leaders who are well formed. Formed around the dimensions or the pillars of formation that we see in Pastore Adabo Vobis of Pope St. John Paul II, but also in co-workers in the Vineyard of the Lord of the U.S. bishops about lay ecclesial ministry. Pastoral formation, spiritual formation, human formation, and intellectual formation. These four areas, but notice the other that's here, intercultural competency. And this is key and central, especially at a Congress, it's a Mid-Atlantic Congress, let's just wake up and smell the coffee, because too often we have these structures and situations and ways of life and leaders who would say, well, yeah, this community I'm coming with, this community, wait a minute. How are we creating a culture of encounter and accompaniment? And it requires this as well. But if this formation is done well, then there is an openness to this, and then a good discernment can occur. But when leaders are not well formed, when there's not resources given to that, when there's not opportunities that are there, when it's poorly done and quickly done, then we shouldn't wonder why the fruit is not as fully, why things are not as fully bountiful as we would like them to be.
As Father Frank alluded to earlier, we also know that this forming missionary disciples is not a new way of being Catholic. It's a renewal of that which has been ever ancient, ever new. And so we do want to return to all of the pieces of the Catholic worldview in which we're immersed every day. And so there is a vision of the Universal Church for evangelization, for forming missionary disciples. If there's been anything consistent from Pope Paul VI to Pope Francis, is this continual sense of we're simply renewing the core of our understanding of what it means to encounter Jesus Christ and to experience him in the sacramental life of the church. And to be the kind of church that absolutely wants to be a place and has something to say to the world. Right? So we want our planning and we want our pastoral practices to reflect the teaching of the church and the wisdom of the 2,000 years of experience we have in calling people to Christ, in educating and forming Christians to be missionary disciples.
So requiring intentional stewardship, right? Intentionality. We are entrusted with the richness of our tradition, of reading the contemporary signs within our parish, within our culture, and being able to manage and supervise and develop. How do we foster the young adults in our parish? How do we help young professionals or new professionals coming into the ministry? Right? I mean, Father Frank talked about formation, but how do we take the best of sound business practices, ethical standards that are foundational to what we do as church, and how do we put that into pastoral practice? Because we're not IBM, and we're not Hewitt Packard, and we're not, how we do business is different. And it should be different. It should be noticeably different. And we need to reflect the richness as stewards that we have been entrusted with, right? Not treasures that need to be discarded, but need to be unpacked for this generation, right? There have been incredible evangelists and theologians and homilists in every generation that help unpack the richness of our tradition for the people in our pews today, right? And so how do we attend to that as stewards?
And how are our budgeting, our human resource practices, our management reflective
family leave
of Catholic social teaching? I'll just leave you with that one. Engages and inspires people through a culture of encounter and accompaniment, building strong and trusting relationships, engaging others every day through witness, including and most especially witnessing to those we are working together with. Often, sad to say, between politics and long knives, it often we're not reflective in our own offices and in among our own staffs of this kind of witnessing. We're great at witnessing to the people who are around us, but not so much the people we work with. God bless you. Creating an atmosphere of invitation, hospitality, and note the last one, trust. Trust continues to be, unfortunately, because of a lot of bad choices and out-and-out sin, trust becomes crushed. And the fact that we still have as much trust in the community of faith and among the people of God in the church in the United States is an act of the Holy Spirit, not just simply ours. But it is something that is built and developed. It is not instant. And for those who grew up in a church where it was instant, that's no longer. And we just need to name that. And therefore, that atmosphere, that culture, needs to be one of invitation and of hospitality, one in which trust is built over time. And building collaborative relationships, teamwork, and commitment. This might sound like, you know, business kind of jargon. No, it is really building co-responsibility. That together, not just simply parish staffs, not just simply diocesan offices, but together with all of the baptized, we're co-responsible for this mission that Christ has left us. And a welcoming and embracing ethnically diverse communities. How often do we have separation or parallelism? Is that welcoming and embracing? And how do we go about that? Respectfully, delicately, learning from one another, journeying with one another. What does that look like? We have models and examples where that's the case, but do we recognize that in our own particular ministries? So it leads then to co-responsibility for the mission of Christ and the church. Seven last words of the church. We have always done it this way. And I loved it when it was in Evangelii Gaudium. It's one of my favorite lines. Pastoral ministry in a missionary key seeks to abandon the complacent attitude that says, we have always done it this way. I invite everyone to be bold and creative in this task of rethinking the goals, structures, styles, and methods of evangelization in their respective communities. Bold and creative, which is a gift of the Spirit as well. The important thing, and this often gets lost in this section of Evangelii Gaudium, that sometimes people will quote that section and they'll stop right there. It's this last piece that is extremely important. The important thing, even the Pope says it's important, is to not walk alone, but to rely on each other as brothers and sisters, and especially under the leadership of the bishops in a wise and realistic. Note the pieces here that Pope Francis puts forward. Wise and realistic pastoral discernment. So, as we come to this point about co-responsibility, this is where we're leading. This is where missionary discipleship, we've become co-responsible for this mission to go forth. To go forth and witness so that then we can assist others in encountering, accompanying them, building further and further and further the community of faith until he comes again, and knowing that we are sent out to be his witnesses to the world.
If you go back. So one of the things for me about co-responsibility is it's really about ownership, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I know, I spent much of my life working in campus ministry, and I think about being a young adult, being a campus minister, and working with Father, and I was perfectly comfortable if there was a problem for it to be Father's fault. I'm here helping out, and I'm right. But if I want, as baptized, to have a share in that responsibility, I have to be willing to have ownership and to recognize my role in that. And as we collaborate, we do rely on each other. A good leader recognizes the gifts and talents around them. I'm not so good at this, but Susan, I would put her in charge of that in a minute, right? How do we rely on one another, but how do we invest in such a way that we have ownership for the church? You know, I work at the Bishops' Conference, and you know, I go places and I'm at conferences or I'm in places, and people often say, you know, the church is struggling and it's really the bishop's fault. Why haven't the bishops done blah, 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 blah to fix this? It's possible they could have made some different decisions, or they will make some other decisions in the future, but the church begins with us. It begins with the baptized sitting in the pews that have co-responsibility for the life of the church. How we live Christ in our own life and within our parish and then in the world has an impact. And that for me is what co-responsibility calls us to.
We want to leave time for questions.
Yes.
We have 5 minutes left in the session. We will be here after. Also, to keep in mind that there will be at 3:00 in this same room a presentation on Living as Missionary Disciples that we're sponsoring. And we welcome you to be a part of that. And we'll talk more about some of the things that we've talked about in this session. This time we focused around pastoral planning. But if you have any questions or comments or thoughts, we have about 5 minutes left to be able to take those.
The Catholic
Apostolate Center. It will be a podcast, so there'll be an audio, and then there'll be also the PowerPoint. That will be up there within another week. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. There was over here and then over here. I think you were first.
Mine is just a comment. Father, you mentioned about parallelism. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people didn't miss that, because oftentimes I think that in the Catholic Church there's such a minorities are really a untapped, African Americans at least are really mm-hmm. untapped in the Catholic Church, and there's so many unchurched African Americans, but it's oftentimes left up to an office for Black Catholics or some type of Asian ministries to put on, or I'm sorry, not Asian ministry, but ethnic ministry mm-hmm. to put on the same thing that the diocese is doing through like an office for evangelization. So there's mm-hmm. an evangelization conference, and then there's an evangelization conference for African Americans, and it's not working. Mm-hmm. And so I think that until we see really an integrated church, integrated mm-hmm. ministries where all the various groups in the church are at the table, we'll continue to see that, and mm-hmm. it really will be a failure in the church in the United States. So I just hope that people don't miss out on that parallelism and how it adversely affects any type mm-hmm. of pastoral planning that we do in the Catholic Church.
I think there's a great deal of learning that can come mm-hmm. from greater different cultural conversations that occur not just simply within a particular cultural group, but that are mixed so that we learn from one another. There's a great, great deal of learning, particularly about witnessing. I think that's very, very true about witnessing. And in my experience working here in Baltimore City for 9 years at St. Jude Shrine and having a number of people who were African American who were part of the community there, and they taught me a great deal about witnessing. How to witness to my brothers and sisters, especially in families and with coworkers. Mm-hmm. That was one thing I learned. But there's a great deal of learning that can go on that can make for greater fruitfulness. So I agree in that. please.
I'm currently a pastor of a university parish, and unfortunately, right now, I feel like there's two communities existing on one campus. Mm-hmm. One is the parishioners that come, that have been going there for years. They're heritage families, and they've been going there forever. And then I have these college students who I just love dearly, and they're coming through every 4 years. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they stay because they get a job in the city. However, pastoral planning is a bit of a task because I'm trying to bring everyone together and just see each other as brothers and sisters and as fellow Catholics on the journey. And so getting some of the older heritage families, who are not always old, to kind of faith share with mm-hmm. the young, up-and-coming, vibrant Catholic who are part of the church, who want to hear the story, why is Jesus important to you? Mm-hmm. So that we can start that pastoral planning, start envisioning what we want to be and who we want to be and how we want to envision ourselves, you know? But it's a struggle, it really is. It's like having two communities that I'm being pulled to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I think it is a beautiful opportunity to say we've got this unique gift in that we've got a piece of the community that's transient but can come in with fresh eyes and can also expend a lot of energy in this moment. And then we've got this other community who we rely on to provide that solidity, right? And then that structure to know that a community is always going to be here. And so I think you're exactly right to get each group to share what the gift of the other brings. And how can you maximize that uniqueness of that particular community?
I also, let me just say a word to that. I also think it's an incredible opportunity to imbue in both communities the sense of hospitality.
We only, even
in a traditional parish, I mean, a parish in D.C., we only have people for a short period of time, right? They're with this agency or this government piece. A sense of hospitality to cherish and treasure the gift of that person now and to hear their story is something I think we need to be more attentive to. And it makes us more receptive to the stranger that comes any given week, right? That all of those stories are valued and enrich the community for however long they're here. And I think to impress upon both communities that's really a gift is also another way to further enhance that dimension of your community.
Juan, so, and then we're going to have to wrap up.
Yeah, so I know we have like just a little time, but Dr. Timmy, you talked about this a little bit, and I think it applies not only to our diocese, but I'm sure many others can share this, about how do we overcome the idea that we don't have the money, we don't have the resource, like we don't have that, right? And it's, let me see, you work with us, so you know that we have that very present in our own diocese, but I'm sure others can join in that sentiment of how do we get past, because as soon as pastoral planning comes up, the first thing that comes up is like, okay, like we want to do this, we have this amazing idea, we have all these things in our head, but how do we put that into action when we don't have those resources, right? Like to not leave out those small parishes or those parishes that just don't have the financial means to get there. So could you just talk a little bit about how do we overcome that?
So I think to me, this is where prayer and discernment become so important, because if the group can discern together what the priorities are, then you've got people saying, okay, at this time and in this place, the priority may be youth. But that's not to say that 3 years from now, we won't be able to shift that priority. So one, having the community come to a common understanding of the priorities, and then it's a little easier to say, so how do we allocate those resources? But I think it's through the prayer and the discerning that the community together recognizes, here's where the Lord is calling us here and now, and that's what we need to respond to. I think the other piece you always want to do is, you want to be able to attend to the building up of that intentional stewardship, right? So that you are saying, we need 3 years to be able to find and gather that money to do this initiative, but we're really going to work at it for 3 years. And so the long-term financial planning that enables the ministries to grow would be two pieces, I would say.
I want to thank Susan and Barbara for working together with us as Catholic Apostolate Center on this presentation. Thank you. We hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this presentation. For more information on the topics covered and to view the presentation slides, please visit our website at www.catholicapostolatecenter.org. There, you will find free resources, webinars, and much more. all designed to help revive faith, rekindle charity, and form apostles.